What lengths would you go to hide your disability? That's what we're talking about today on Inside Out. Hello, I'm Emma Tracy, and with me on the phone is Emily Shanahan. Hello, Emily.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Good, good, good. Now, we're talking about it because Scope have brought out some new research today as part of their ongoing End the Awkward campaign. And they've done a survey and found that 38% of disabled people hide their disabilities. So they conceal their disabilities. And that goes up to 66% of people between 18 and 34. You're between 18 and 34, Emily, aren't you?
Yes.
And you've been hiding your disability over the years as well.
Yes, I have.
Tell me a bit about that.
When I was younger, I used to get bullied a lot, so I tried to hide my different disabilities. I have a form of autism, which means I'd get stressed and upset, and I'd play with my hair and my hands, but I'd manage to hide it under the desk and not cry until I was by myself. When I got home, I'd get really distressed, but no one at school knew what was going on because I'd hide it. I'd sort of throw myself about. I used to bang my head and pull my hair. I'd scream and shout at my parents. And
do you think that happened more because you were hiding your disability in school?
It was a lot worse because when it happened, I couldn't portray it because I was trying to hide everything. So then when I came home, it all built up, and then I got really worked up about it.
Why were you being bullied, Emily?
Because I needed help. I had to have somebody with me because I forget things or I'd get confused.
So you had a support person in the classroom with you, and that people made fun of you because of that?
Yes.
Right, that must have been difficult because you had someone with you every single day.
Yeah, it was quite hard. More because I got bullied. It was all right having someone with me because at least I had someone to talk to, but I didn't have many friends that were my age.
And do you think they didn't understand, or do you think they did understand, but they...
I'm not sure. I think some people did understand. The way they said stuff, they definitely understood, but then some people just copied the other people, but they didn't understand about my disabilities.
Would you be able to tell us some of the things they said to you, or is that too upsetting for you?
They called me a retard, and I walk slightly funny, so I've been called a peg leg. People used to make fun of when I got upset, and in the end I used to get changed for PE separate to everyone else because I'd struggle doing my buttons and I need help, so people would take the mick out of me and call me a baby and stuff like that.
That's absolutely horrible. No wonder you tried to hide things, because you've got Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as well as Asperger's, and you also have dyspraxia. Yeah. I actually asked the question on my personal Facebook page, which is something I rarely do, ask work questions on my Facebook, but I asked people what lengths they would go to hide their disability, and I have to be honest, I was pretty surprised because I'm blind from birth. Mine is so obvious that the only way I can hide is at the end of a phone line or a computer. So most of the time it's very easy to know that I'm blind, and it's something I'm used to, so I don't bother trying to hide it. But I was reasonably shocked and saddened by the response from my disabled Facebook friends. Some of my friends with dual disability said that often mental health wasn't taken into account, whether that be because of the disability or mental health that goes alongside the disability. So, you know, people weren't, their mental health wasn't understood, even though maybe their blindness or their physical disability was. Do you find that people's, your physical disability, because you walk with a stick now, don't you, Emily?
Yeah, I've recently started walking with a stick.
And do you find that makes it easier for people to know that there's something?
It does. But it still doesn't make that much of a difference. When I use public transport, even though I've got my stick and I have my assistance dog, people don't move out the way. They don't offer the seat. And I've had to walk right down a carriage before, and me and Magic have had to sit in the smallest space. And then people were standing on him because he didn't fit.
Yeah.
In the space.
So yeah, you've gone from hiding it at all costs to having a support dog, which is a big signal, isn't it? That you have a disability. And we were just talking last week on the Ouch Talk show about the Please Offer Me Your Seat badges that TFL are trialling. Would you wear one of those? Do you think that would be useful for you?
I think it would be very useful. I don't know if it would work with, like, if people would accept it, but it would be very useful.
You mentioned your support dog. Tell me a little bit about Magic. When did Magic come along and what does he do for you?
I got Magic just before my 21st birthday last year. He was 3 months old when I got him, and he has changed my life. He can help me physically and emotionally. He will help me get undressed because I can't do it myself because my hands don't work very well. If I get upset, he'll calm me down. He'll hug me and make sure I'm calm. He's given me a completely different outlook of life. I've become more confident because I didn't used to leave the house by myself because of what people would say and do. And what, since I've got him, people talk to you because you've got an assistance dog, because people are more accepting to the fact, they can see it more. Because even with a stick, I think people were like, well, you're only 22, you don't really need a stick.
But with a dog, they kind of think they wouldn't have given you a dog if you didn't need it, kind of thing. You were telling me earlier that you don't have road sense and that Magic is a bit of a help with that. Tell me what he does.
I have a memory problem, so I forget to look when I'm crossing a road. So from an early age, he got taught to sit at a curb, so he'll sit even if I forget to tell him to sit. And then he looks, he looks a lot at anything, so he'll sort of just turn his head when he's sat, and that reminds me that I've got to look to see if there's any cars coming, see that it's clear that we can cross. And he will carry on sitting if a car comes and I go to cross.
Right, but you wouldn't necessarily trust a dog with your life, kind of thing. But he will stay.
Yeah,
you know, he's got that sense himself, kind of thing.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And then something else you were telling me about was earlier when we were having a chat was about what he does for you when you get upset. Tell me a bit more about that. Tell me a bit more detail.
When I get upset, I will slam the door and walk off. He's been taught to open the door behind me and follow me to wherever I go, which is usually my bedroom. Then he will lie on top of me, and if I've been crying, he'll lick the tears. And then he licks my ear because that makes me laugh. And then he'll sort of play until I've calmed down. He'll play on top of me and he'll cuddle me, and then he'll carry on.
Goodness. And you've had Magic since he was a really small puppy, haven't you?
Yes, I got him at 3 months old. Because my behaviours would scare a normal dog.
What behaviours are they?
I will hit myself, I will bang my head, I will pull my hair, but I have shorter hair now, so it doesn't come out. I cut it short so I could brush it myself because I couldn't reach because I can't lift my arms as high. But so that was one of the reasons, but then we realised that I can't actually pull my hair out, now it's shorter as well.
Yeah, so that's an added bonus kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also on my Facebook page, some of the people with mental health issues were saying that they don't tend to disclose their disability when they're looking for a job because they're worried about attitudes that might come to them. They don't say how well or unwell they are while they're in the job because they're worried about what will be thought of them there. And people with chronic pain have said the same on my page about the fact that they're worried about being unreliable, seen as unreliable or seen as not up to the job if they show how much pain they're in or how much discomfort they're in. So they push on through it, and then obviously they have consequences from that because they end up having to maybe stay in bed for a week after they've done something really taxing. Have you found that as well?
Yeah, I do find that it is very hard to get a job. I did a placement through uni for 6 months, and uni were great. The placement were quite good, but it was when that came, I was supposed to do 12 months, but for reasons outside my control, I could only do six. And then when I went to find another placement, it was really hard to find one because of my disability and, like, doing certain things. And I tried to explain that I can do it, it will just take me a lot longer. But people, especially if they see on your form that you've got some sort of disability, especially a form of autism, they're not willing to take you on or change things, even though you can work, you can do a good job.
Yeah. So did you feel like going back to your days of hiding things?
Yeah, that is around the time that I got Magic. So that was upsetting. But then I got him and he sort of just changed. And I started going out and walking him. And we went a few times to a local farm and we did a little bit. And he came with me and people realised that I was going to be slow.
Mm. But they took that into account.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone on my Facebook said that they use a stick and when they see someone they like, they avoid getting up so as not to spoil the illusion for a little bit so that they can have a bit of a chat before the person realises that she's got some physical impairments. And she also, actually the status update that I put on made her realise that she hides it, and she hadn't even consciously realised that she hides her walking stick in the corner of a bar or a restaurant when she's there, kind of as much out of sight as possible.
I've done a lot of online dating through sort of the disabled online dating pages. Mm. And I think I've done that because people can't see me, so they can't judge me before they've spoke to me. If I do meet people out and about, I do tend to put my stick under the table anyway, mainly so it doesn't get knocked over. But subconsciously, you do hide your stick. And like Magic goes under the table, so most of the time people don't even know he's there.
Yeah, yeah. Because a blind person on my page said that sometimes she puts her dog under the table before everybody else comes into the room. So before anyone comes in, if she's in a work situation for a meeting, so that she can just get on with the conversation at hand and not have to, you know, talk about blindness or the dog until whatever business dealing she's doing is done, and then maybe the dog pops out from under the table then and they realise, you know,
yeah,
that there's something different. So tell me, you want to do something really interesting.
When I finish uni, I want to eventually go on to set up a care farm. A care farm is for people with disabilities to learn how to farm, and eventually some people may be able to get a job. It's sort of a social farm situation, so you get support on the farm, as well as learning new skills, and you can learn sort of how to grow your own veg and then cook it, make fresh meals, the whole process of sort of living independently through farming.
Have you got a strategy for that? Does that exist anywhere already?
Yes, because my first placement was on a care farm in Hertfordshire.
Right, okay, that sounds really interesting. I want to go there and see what it's like. How was it?
It was really good. There is a website called Care Farm in UK that has a list of lots of different ones on.
So just to bring it back to what we were talking about, Scope have this research out to coincide with the Paralympic Games, which is currently happening in Rio. And actually, I forgot to mention this, Paralympics was a big thing for you in 2012, wasn't it? It did
yeah,
quite a lot for you.
The Paralympics definitely gave me a better outlook on the fact that you shouldn't hide your disability, because they don't, and people are more accepting. I think with the 2012 Paralympics, especially because it was in London, it helped more people understand that people with disabilities can do things, a lot of things that people don't realise. And instead of looking at what I can't do, I try to look at what I can do. I'm not very good at it because of my Asperger's,
yeah,
but I like the farming. I look at what I can do, and I really enjoy farming, and I find a way to do it. I've hand-reared piglets and lambs and cows. So.
And is that since 2012 you've done that?
Yes.
Right, so it's given you the confidence to look at something that you can do. So it didn't necessarily get you into sport, but it changed how you felt about yourself?
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, the research that's just come out by Scope, 62% still feel like they're treated differently because of their impairment. And 76% of 18 to 24-year-olds feel that they're treated differently. So it's not brought the public right up in line with disabled people, but at least the Paralympics has done something really good for you.
I think it helps the disabled people more than the able-bodied people, because it helps them get a better outlook on life, but there still isn't that much awareness around all the different disabilities.
Yeah.
And I think there needs to be more.
Emily, it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the Ouch Inside Ouch podcast today.
You're welcome.
This has been Inside Ouch. I'm Emma Tracy. If you want to get in touch with us, email ouch@bbc.co.uk. Find us on Twitter @BBCOuch. Like us on Facebook. And if you want to hear or watch more of our stuff, go to bbc.co.uk/news/disability. Thank you so much, Emily.